Blog Talk Radio.
In these days of tea parties and constitution rallies, we're all looking back to our founding fathers for a little bit of wisdom. Samuel Adams said, "It does not take a majority to prevail, but rather an irate, tireless minority, keen on setting the brush fires of freedom in the hearts of men." This is the voice of an irate, tireless minority of one. We'll be talking about politics, religion, and doing what's right. And you can call me Mom.
You're lost, you don't know where you are, you're all alone. You're in the dark and you don't know where to find the light.
You have to put up with the froggy voice because despite 5 weeks of vocal rest, the problem did not resolve itself. Although, thank you all for your prayers, and I covet them because I'm going to have surgery to remove that vocal nodule on the 16th, which of course means I'll have to be on vocal rest again after that for at least 2 weeks and possibly more, depending on how things go. And welcome to the chat room, Bigfoot and Red Fox Radio. Good to see you here. Today it's just going to be me talking. I'm not citing a lot of links, although I will list one, and it's in the show description page. But other than that, anything, any news articles I reference, you can find on my Facebook page. Just look for Call Me Mom on Facebook. And hopefully you will, you know, get some good reading there. Now, I am going to get into things. First of all, politics. Oh, yes, the Iowa caucuses, the Iowa primaries, they determine everything. Sure they do, just as long as we let them. That's going to tell us who to vote for. Let's see. My husband was listening to his financial news, and what was the BBC playing but a very short clip that just had Donald Trump saying, "The people of Iowa are stupid." No context, just Donald Trump saying, "The people of Iowa are stupid." Gee, do you think that might have been an attempt to influence the polls? And then we have the whole Mr. Cruz thing. Mr. Cruz's campaign did this, that, or the other, sent out official-looking mailings to deceive people into thinking this, that, or the other, into thinking that Mr. Carson was no longer running. And then, of course, on the Democratic side, we have the Hillary supporters fudging the numbers and making there be multiple coin tosses because they're not actually following their own procedures as to who's winning what delegates. Oh, gee, you think a confirmed liar and confessed criminal might cheat or attract people who are willing to cheat in the service of their cause? Surely in America there are no people like that. Well, wake up. Of course there are, and there's more now than ever before because we are abandoning our Christian faith, the faith which says you are accountable not to men but to God. Oh, and I'm getting into ranty mode already, and I have to stop that because when I come back on vocal after vocal rest, I'm going to have to not be ranting or yelling, and that's going to be a challenge if things keep going the way they have been. So we have the Iowa primary under our belts. Whoop-de-doo. Here's what I see in a candidate, in the candidate field. We've got Mr. Trump. A man whose morals are worse than an alley cat's. I say this because of his own words in various interviews about, you know, first a about being divorced three times, about cheating on his wife, about cheating on other people's husbands with their wives. The man does not respect his primary connection on this earth. His wives cannot trust him. His business partners cannot trust him with their wives. His wives cannot trust him, so why should I? Yes, he gets a lot of news. Yes, he says what we're all thinking. He speaks the truth. Great for him. But the fact is that he would have been marginalized as a loony by the mainstream media if he did not command enough economic clout and enough fame clout, you know, voter recognition clout from his reality show, to command the respect of the media and make them afraid not to cover him, which has been what they usually do. Do you think we would have heard about Ben Carson at all if Mr. Trump hadn't mentioned him? Because the media doesn't have to cover anybody they don't want to. They control who they cover. And through that, they are using it to control the election, which tells us one thing, that we need to get off our butts and do our own research and look at the I think it was over 1,400 candidates registered with the FEC to find the best candidate, regardless of party. Because what we've got is a bunch of ineligible people, a man with the morals of an alley cat, and that's on the conservative side. And those ineligible candidates, Cruz, Rubio, Jindal, guess what? Oh, they're ineligible, but so is Obama, and it's okay because they're nice, and they're saying what we want to hear, and they're conservative, and so that makes it okay. No, it doesn't. That makes them liars. Harvard-educated lawyer Cruz, in constitutional law, who helped his own father with the citizenship process for this country, comes out in 2014, right before he wants to declare for the presidency, to say he didn't know that he was a dual citizen of Canada. He didn't know. And I'm a turnip. Please, the man is lying. And if you're going to allow liars to lie to you, then you're going to get a liar. And on the other side, we have a self-confessed criminal serial liar who was dismissed from her job as an intern on the Watergate scandal for unethical behavior and lying, who was the only first lady in the history of the United States to be fingerprinted by the FBI over what? Concealing documents. Served as a congresswoman and as a secretary of state, and says she doesn't understand that she couldn't have a private unsecured email server? Seriously, people? Seriously, I just want to slap the stupid out of you. But it can't be done. It can't be done. And her opponent, Mr. I'm a socialist, and I'm going to tax your brains out to pay for everything I want to give to people free. It's not free. Everything must be paid for. There ain't no such thing as a free lunch. You want to see where free gets you? Look at Venezuela. It is on the brink of social and political collapse. Because why? Socialism, which is the nice word for communism, because communism's the goal. It doesn't work. It's never worked. Never, ever in all of recorded history that it has been tried has socialism or communism ever worked. Stupid is so deep out there, I just don't know what to do. So I'm going to move on from politics, and I'm going to talk about war. And I'm going to start out by reading some of a blog post, an article, by Mark McYoung, and he was replying to a thread in The Guardian, and I'm not sure what that thread was about. It was a link that said, "I'm tired of being kind to creepy men in order to be safe." That's the title, and he links to the article, which I have not read. But you know, he made a snarky comment and comment. And then someone for whom English is a second language asked me about why it is silly, because he had said that he said, here's the thing, way too many people believe they have a right to walk around in their own private Idaho and then get obnoxious when they are surprised out of it or if someone dares to break the rules. The fact that the person is silly enough to behave that way has already sent out all kinds of messages, especially to predators. And then someone asked him, why is it silly? And he says, it turns out that explaining that is a can of worms. He says, we live in a unique period of human history, and by that I mean you can spend a lifetime looking at how our lives are different from our ancestors and how those differences influence our thinking, assumptions, beliefs, awareness, consciousness, and behavior. We're not superior to our ancestors, but we do think differently. Then he uses an analogy about someone who grows up in California, and they are used to the idea that the ground moves, and it bothers them when they come to the Midwest to visit somebody whose experience has been that the ground is solid and stable. And they see things sitting on the edges of tables, breakable things, and they want to move them back because they know from their experience that the ground is not stable. Okay? So basically, unless you come from a place of earthquakes, you assume the earth is not going to move. Thinking otherwise is just stupid and paranoid. But what were the realities? He says, do you know how many people died during the early days of electricity turning on the lights before switch safety improved? Your ancestors had to pay attention because, yeah, if you're using a fire for light or a lamp for light, you knock that puppy over, and you've got a fire on your hands. You need to be careful. You need to pay attention. Your ancestors had to pay attention when they were doing something in a simple and as simple and mundane as turning on the lights. Do you? I ask because there's an assumption of safety, which is generally speaking true in modern society. What does that do to your mindset? Seriously, if you put on earbuds while on a train during the rush hour commute, that's one thing. But wearing earbuds while walking through a crowd? Are you nuts? Oh, gee, you're on the subway at 2 a.m. and wearing your earbuds? Hello? There are times and places that you can zone out safely, and then there are situations where your attention and brain cells better be on the clock, even in this our modern and safe world. And yet many people have developed the idea that they exist in an isolation bubble, a bubble that is in effect any place, any time. It has in fact become a new form of politeness. If I crawl into my isolation bubble and you crawl into yours, we can politely ignore each other as we go about our business. We do this because we can get away with it. That is, until it doesn't work. With most people, when it doesn't work, they completely fall apart or they become verbally abusive. And I think this is because, just like there's a book out saying, the people who survive emergency situations, plane crashes, fires and the like, are the people who actually pay attention to the safety information provided to them and visualize themselves doing those safety procedures. The exits are here, 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 and here. You go to a hotel, you count the doors between your door and the exit door in case there's a fire and you have to crawl on the floor so you can count the doors as you're going along and know this is the exit door, this is where I have to go out. The people who do that have a greater tendency to survive than the people who don't, at least so they assume, because that's what the people who survive tell them. And if you visualize a path of action, then your brain has a framework to work with. But if you just go through life thinking, I can do this, and there's no other possibilities that can happen, then when you're presented with an emergency situation that is outside of that bubble, outside of your expectations, you have nowhere to go. Your brain doesn't know what to do, and it shuts down on you. And he talks about the movie Crocodile Dundee and the cultural shock of him being friendly with New Yorkers who were famed for their rudeness and aloofness at that time. And at the same time, he had resources other than social scripts, expectations and assumptions, resources that city dwellers didn't have. You remember the old, that's not a knife, this is a knife scene. A New Yorker wouldn't have been able to do that. Well, average New Yorker. And he says, I tell you this because the woman in that article is functionally complaining that her life choices, socialization, and the let's flop this dead stinky fish onto the table, the source of her power and control over others, don't always work. She was literally being forced out of her comfort zone. More than that, she wants you to know about it, preferably so that someone else will do something about it. And here's where things glitch for me. Instead of saying, okay, this usually works, but occasionally we have to do something else, things go the other way. We're looking at an escalation of commitment, of this has to work. And I read this and I thought about the videos coming out of Sweden where they show some woman who's saving herself from an attacker by putting her hand up and saying no, or putting both hands up and saying no, or eventually swatting the man with her purse. Yeah, that's going to work. I don't think so. But it has to work because otherwise they have to face reality. He says, and most of the time it's a call for someone else to fix her problem. It's a call for someone else to fix their problem. Who are they calling for? They're calling for the old America in Switzerland and Norway. That's who they're calling for. Or Sweden. I don't remember where the film came from. What makes it worse, she doesn't want to leave her comfort zone. Hey, you think this guy is dangerous and wants to hurt you? Carry a knife or a gun. You know, my personal choice there would be a gun because you can use that from farther away. Carry a knife and use it if you have to because that might be what it takes to stop him, and far better to have and not need than need and not have is the other part of that. But I don't wanna. My self-image and comfort zone is that I'm a nice person and I shouldn't have to stab anyone to stay safe. Someone else do something to make this bad person leave me alone. Oh, yeah, and while you're at it, you privileged sexist oppressor, don't tell me that I can't wear my earbuds while walking down the street at 2 a.m. alone after drinking, dressed this way. That's interfering with my rights and freedoms, and I already told you I'm not going to carry a knife or a gun when I do my 2 a.m. stroll. And then he says, take a good look at those attitudes in the context of power and controlling others. And then he points out the difference between an annoyance and a danger. And the fact that if you want to deal with a danger, you need to be able to come out of your comfort zone. And the world right now is in a big, fat comfort zone that has been provided by the United States of America and the Christian values of the United States of America. The idea, when we go to war, people, oh, we're not going to really hurt anybody. We're going to try and win over their hearts and minds. You want to know what wins over the hearts and minds of the people of Islam? Strength. A demonstration of strength. That's why ISIS is growing. Not because you know, Islam is wonderful. It's not. It's a barbaric death cult. But because they show strength, and strength is what is respected. Not only that, but I've said before that it is unethical to go into a place and expect people to give up their hope of paradise in eternity. Eternity after this life, after our body, after the lives of this physical body is over, we have eternity to consider. And in Islam, eternity is gained by following the precepts of Islam. Just like in Christianity, eternity is gained by following the gospel, by believing in Christ and accepting his work for you. And you cannot ask somebody to give up paradise in eternity for better roads and schools and better behavior maybe now and school for girls even. That's wimp behavior. It's unethical. It's not an even exchange. it's peaceful. It's a sigh of relief for a moment, but then you go back to the real world where Islam rules you in those countries. If you want to win those countries over, you go in and you win. And you win. And not only do you go in, but you use your best weapon. You want to win their hearts and minds, you send Christian soldiers in there. You load them up with Bibles and Bible tracts and little video chips that they can show to people of the gospel. Because Islam isn't really that wonderful a religion. In the first place, it's a lie. And their own doctrine says that Allah is the greatest of deceivers. It's one of his wonderful names, the greatest of all deceivers. Don't you think a little bit of logic could push that right over and say, really? How do you know he's not deceiving you? You're Allah. He wants people in hell. But Jesus wants people in heaven. Jesus wants to make you part of his family. Jesus values truth. The God of the Bible values truth. Jesus says, I am the way, the truth, and the life. And no man cometh unto the Father but by me. You want to win the war in those countries? You fight it with Christianity, because then you are saying your God is lying to you and you have no reason to believe he isn't, because he prides himself on being the greatest of all deceivers. My God values truth. My God says all liars are going to be cast into the lake of fire. All liars. That would be somebody, that would include your little God, who prides himself on being the greatest of all liars. That's the truth you share with those people. And you don't give them better roads and schools. You make them build them themselves. If they wanted better roads and schools, they could have them. They have workers there. They have people there. They can do their own stuff. But no, we can't actually engage in war because that's not real. Put it away. We don't have to look at it. Nobody should be killed by us because that's bad. We can't even kill donkeys. Because those donkeys, even though they're carrying bombs that might hurt some of our soldiers, those are what people use to make their livelihood, and we can't interfere with that while we're at war with them. Really? Really? Are we really that stupid, that isolated, that invested in our own little everybody should be safe bubble? That we won't bomb donkeys? Now, I like donkeys. Donkeys are wonderful creatures. But they are not the equivalent of people. We don't sacrifice. Our soldiers, our fellow citizens, do not sign up for the military in order to have their lives be considered as worth less than that of a donkey. Because that's the exchange that's made when you won't kill those donkeys who are carrying bombs and ammo that are going to be used against our soldiers. You're saying, I am trading their ability to use that donkey for their livelihood for my fellow soldier's life. Is that a commander-in-chief that you want in charge? That man should never have been in charge. He should never have been in that place. He's not eligible any more than Cruz or Rubio or Jindal are. We are insane. We're insane, and until we get back to sanity, we can do nothing. But we don't look like we're headed to sanity. And why do I say that? Because I'm moving on to doing what's right. And the death of Lavoie Finicum, that should never have happened. Our law enforcement people take an oath. FBI, CIA, they all take an oath. Sheriffs take an oath. They take an oath to support and defend, or to support and uphold, depending on, you know, who you are, what office it is, the Constitution of the United States. And when you have peaceful protesters who have a legitimate constitutional complaint, it is not the job of law enforcement to kill those protesters. It's not their place. It is not their place to say, well, we've got all these rules and regulations that we're going to enforce on those protesters because we don't like what they're saying or because we think they're silly. You don't get to make that call. When you have a group of protesters with a valid constitutional grievance, then it's your job to go to the government, to go to Congress, and tell Congress to debate that question and let you know what should be done. That's not your call, law enforcement, because that is questioning the supreme law of the land. It's out of your jurisdiction. And especially when they're saying, we are on the side of the supreme law of the land. You don't want to say, you don't want to be, oh, I'm a constitutional scholar and I know that, so I, as law enforcement, I can do whatever I like. No, you don't get that call. And you certainly don't get to force a confrontation with people who were coming to see you anyway and kill them. You don't get to do that. Because what you did when you did that, law enforcement, FBI, governor of Oregon, sheriffs of that county, what you do when you did that is you told America you no longer have a right to petition the government for a redress of grievances. Why do I say that? Why couldn't they have gone through channels, through the regulatory channels, through the courts, through whatever? Because the thing is that when you are charging that the government is taking your land from you, illegally, unconstitutionally, you have to go to court. And you have to pay pricey lawyers and go to pricey courts. And the government has all the money of the taxpayers at its disposal to throw against you, to delay the case, to eat out your substance by making the case drag on until you have lost everything you have and everything you will have. And once you've lost your land, then guess what? The court can dismiss your case because you no longer have standing, right? If you don't have land that's being taken from you, then you don't have standing to sue about land being taken from you because you don't own it. The system doesn't work when we play lawfare. It was never meant to be that way. And we have a right to petition the government for the redress of grievances. The government, not the court system. These protesters had a right and have a right to petition the government for the redress of grievances. And law enforcement has no right to force confrontations or call your congressman. Let them know it's unacceptable. Because if you don't speak up for them, there may be nobody left to speak up for you. And that is my 90-second warning. So I'm going to say again, thanks for joining me, Bigfoot and Red Fox Radio. And we are all an irate, tireless minority of one. We can all make a difference. We are supposed to. So, and for those of you saying, how could you call your rep every day with that Benghazi impeachment thing? I emailed and said in the email, let it stand for my daily call, and I'll be doing that again once I have surgery. So y'all have a great day. Have a great week. See ya.